Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, this is Adam Barrett. Welcome to another edition of Speaking of Reliability. I'm here today with Chris Stoppelman. Hey, Chris, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing, Adam?
Doing good. Chris and I are colleagues in the Mastermind Reliability group, where we do a lot of good collaboration with other reliability engineers. And Chris and I always have a lot of fun conversations. And we decided it would be great to share some of our conversations with the audience. So we had a few topics we'd already had kind of realized that we would probably have more than a couple of episodes of material, and we thought we just would jump right in and get started. So I think one of the things we were talking about is something that a lot of people, you know, a lot of conversations in reliability engineers get together, are the unique situation for our discipline where we enter organizations that don't have an established reliability program or a long history of it. And we come in there and we have to begin to not only, you know, implement these, but break a lot of, you know, cultural norms and common practices, you know, a lot of against the grain kind of stuff. So, and I know you had a lot, you had some things you wanted to share on that from your experiences.
Yes, I wanted to give an overview of how I got into reliability. I worked in the semiconductor industry as an equipment engineer and a process engineer for a number of years, almost 10 years before I got into reliability. And I worked for a company that was starting or was looking for a reliability engineer to build up a reliability test lab for solar panels. And previously I'd been working in that company as a test engineer for solar cells, and I was ready to move on to a different department and try something new. So I thought, well, I'll give this a try. And I didn't quite know what I was getting into at the time, but I don't regret getting into reliability because there's always so much to learn. And how I got started was I started studying for the CRE exam because that gave me a good overview of the different topics that a reliability engineer had to cover. And I used the books that ASQ published on reliability and their practice questions that you can get from them to kind of get me through that topic and get up to speed on different aspects of reliability engineering. And at the same time, my task was to build up a reliability test lab with accelerated life testing for solar panels. And I had to rely heavily initially on colleagues within the company at a different location that already had a big test lab, and we wanted a satellite test lab for our branch here in the United States. And we didn't really have acceleration models that we used that we had developed ourselves. So we were relying on industry standards for accelerated testing to start with.
So it's kind of interesting. This is an interesting specific scenario, and I'm actually familiar with it too, where you already were in the company. You had a role that was somewhat associated with, you know, potentially reliability. The company didn't have a formal reliability initiative, it sounds like. They decided to do it, and you were picked. Is that the scenario that happened to be part of creating it? Yeah.
Yeah, I may have been the only person applying for it, too.
everybody who volunteers step forward, and everybody else takes a step back except for you. You're like, wait a minute. What happened? That's similar for me, too. So how would you describe the culture? And I mean, because a big part of it is what drove them to decide to make that change, that now you are a part of that initiative. What do you think had happened that brought that into focus for them and they realized they needed to create this specific function in their organization?
What triggered it was that they added on a solar panel manufacturing facility to the solar cell factoring line that they had already. And the reason for the reliability program was that solar panel manufacturers historically give 25, 30 years of warranty on their product, so they have to last for a really long time. And if you want to avoid any huge recalls or the warranty expenses of early failures, then You need some sort of reliability program.
Okay. So it was business driven. It had to do with basically, in some ways, it sounds like marketing, being able to say that they've validated it. And then, of course, they're realizing that their brand is very dependent on it. If they're going to stay competitive, this has to be part of their brand, it sounded like.
Yeah, it's just a requirement. If somebody wants to put up a solar farm and get a bank loan for it, you know, the bank needs to know that they get their money back, meaning that the solar farm's going to make money. That means the solar panels are going to work as expected.
Yeah. And so then you referenced this other group that was there, this other group that was at a different facility. So was there kind of was it felt that you were going to try to mimic some of the things they were doing, or what was what you were going to do totally different?
I took a subset of what they were doing there. They were going, it was an R&D group. They were going much beyond just the simple accelerated life testing that we ended up doing in the lab that I set up. They helped us in the selection of the climate chambers and requirements for the chambers and got that started. And the next challenge then was, as sort of a lab manager, was to set up the procedures around how do we trace samples as they come in and set up processes there. And I ended up using SharePoint quite a bit to set up a tracking system of our test sample.
I it's really interesting. One of the bigger things that I naively didn't think would be so huge was the reception of it. I have found that like the two times I did something similar to what you're describing here in organizations, it really was a 50-50 split between people that were embracing it because they wanted something specific to come out of it, and people that were going to resist it no matter what because they saw it as a hindrance to their job function somehow. Did you see that kind of split? That was that clear, or was it more gray areas?
It was pretty well supported. One of the challenges was to bring the cost of the solar panels down very rapidly. And part of how to do that was to get qualified cheaper and lower cost materials and make sure that the performance of the solar panel doesn't suffer or the reliability of the panel doesn't suffer over time. So we were challenged with almost every month there was a new material that we had to qualify in our solar panels. And so we did quite a bit of testing. Once you find something that doesn't look right, of course, nobody really wants to hear that since you want to bring that new material to market and realize the cost savings. But there were a few occasions where we said, hey, this looks like a really bad combination of materials here. We don't want to do this based on our early test results. And actually, I was asked to lead a team to find the root cause of what was going on. And that was a fun project in and of itself, having a cross-functional team doing design experiments and trying to figure out what was going on, what was causing the failure, and finally finding a few things that we improved at the same time to improve the reliability of that particular design of the solar panel.
Yeah, that can be super fun. And that does build a lot of good camaraderie across a lot of disciplines when you do, you know, investigations like that, where you're all on the hunt together to figure out the same, you know, the same issue. That can be a really good way to kind of get people behind all of these tools.
Yeah, and going back to how else I learned, you know, a lot of on-the-job learning. I watched a lot of the webinars that ASQ has out there, and Fred Schenkelberg is leading a lot of those efforts as well. So those are good places to go to, or his Xendo reliability website that has podcasts that I recently started listening to on my commute. I don't know why I haven't done it sooner, really. Now I have to catch up on a lot of episodes.
Yeah. Well, now you're on it too, so. Yeah. No, it is great. I mean, that is one of the things with the reliability discipline is how how many lone wolves there are out there. You know, is there's so many reliability groups that are effectively one or two people. And definitely, it's really great to see the camaraderie outside, just in the reliability community, you know, not being outside of any specific industry, is a place to learn and grow. And there's more and more of that, which is good. It's kind of funny to think it's in its infancy in some ways, the discipline, even though it's, you know, been formally around since the 60s. But it still seems to be something that's still slowly creeping into a lot of organizations. I mean, in my own experience, I went to, you know, a medical company that was 50 years old, a half a century old, and they had no formal reliability kind of central knowledge. So I came in to build a reliability group from scratch because all the reliability work was kind of done individual and piecemeal, even, you know, different amongst different product lines. And, you know, it's kind of amazing that there's, you know, very complex systems out there that, you know, the reliability discipline is not very present in the product development process. So what you've just described is a lot of people experience where there is that, you know, you still have that kind of initial, you know, introduction to even these very mature products and companies.
Yeah, absolutely. And it almost seems like when you're one reliability engineer within a company, you're trying to reinvent the wheel almost. And when I started talking to more and more people in different companies and industries or at conferences, everybody seems to be facing the same problem as a reliability engineer. It's the same type of just somewhat of one-man show.
Yep.
There's the same kind of pushback across organizations, and whether you're in the product design or more on the lifecycle warranty side, you know, the lack of field data is common across of good high quality field data is common across companies. Challenges in the development process, pushback against spending time and money on reliability testing. Everybody has the same issues, really. And it's kind of reassuring to see that it's not, oh man, I must be doing something wrong here. It's just, you know, right, that's just how it goes as a reliability engineer.
So as somebody who's done the uphill climb of bringing this into an organization, what would you advise to somebody who is just beginning that journey?
If you can go to a conference, you know, do that and talk to other people, learn from them, learn from webinars and information that's out there, that people are sharing methods, that people are sharing. And what's really important is also, you know, communication. I find interpersonal skills are very important as a reliability engineer because you have to work with so many different groups and teams. And you have to make sure that you're being included into the conversations and get into development processes early on in the project. You don't want to end up being the reliability police when you get to a phase gate and having to say, hey, this looks bad, this doesn't work, or your design isn't very good. Nobody likes that. You're slowing the company down. People are getting upset. So anything you can do, that you can engage with the development teams early on is going to be helpful. I see the role as assisting and guiding the designers and developers into making their product better by showing them ways and tools on how to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I definitely can look back at the mistakes I made, you know, in doing it. And even the second time I did it, the things I did better, but other mistakes I made. And it's very much, you know, like you're saying, with connecting with the team and finding ways where your contribution is helping them with their goals. Because by probably immediate glance, they see what you're doing is probably something that might be inhibiting them accomplishing their goals. And I kind of was surprised how many people saw it that way. People who feel that, you know, the schedule is critical and they see you as doing nothing but adding, you know, time with these activities you want to do. Or designers who feel that, you know, they've worked very hard to show their technical ability and you're just going to come in and show everybody how it doesn't work. And it goes on and on, like people are associated with costs, so you're just adding costs, you know. And so it definitely is very much worth the time trying to look at the goals of each of these people and see how you can show them that these different methods can very specifically help them. And it might take some creativity too.
And I think you can feel like you're achieving this and being successful if people come to you if with questions, if you're a part of the team, if you're really feeling like you're part of the team and you're helping people, and you don't have to pull teeth to get invited. People come and seek you out for help.
Yeah,
I think that's one measure of success.
That is a great measure of success. If they clearly see value, if they're pursuing you. You know, the other challenge was that I found that I was surprised at one time where it was brought to my attention, you know, by leaders, was that people didn't feel that I, as the reliability person, had skin in the game. And this is that careful balance, which you mentioned. You mentioned the, you know, the role is not to do reliability, it's to guide and to, you know, lead in the reliability activities. But the response to that can be, hey, you don't have any skin in the game. You're just telling us what to do. Whether we succeed or fail, it doesn't, you know, fall back on you, or, you know, you're not having to do the work. So that's tricky, because obviously we know that reliability engineers doing reliability work alone doesn't do anything for the product. You can't test reliability in. It can't be something you do after it's been developed. So we know that we want it to be a process that everybody's engaged with, which means we're leading. But it can't be that we're just, you know, it's a construction project and we're the supervisor standing on the side of the road just watching and pointing. So that's a tricky balance. And I found that if that kind of feeling gets out there that the reliability guys don't have skin in the game and don't have risk with the product success, that can be very hard to recover from.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and one more piece of advice I could give is, don't be afraid to hire a consultant if your company supports that financially to help with certain aspects of reliability. It's hard as a reliability engineer to be an expert in every single thing in reliability. And I recently had hired a consultant to help me set up my first hall test. I've read about it in books, but when it came down to planning the test, I felt like I just don't really know how to interpret the results, and it's better to get to pay for somebody to help me with the interpretation. That way we're getting a lot more value out of the money we're spending on the test itself. So don't be afraid to go ask for help somewhere else.
Yeah. And I didn't pay you to say that. So, yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that reliability engineering is great, a great discipline to consult in. And one of the reasons why I've enjoyed consulting in it so much is because it is an isolated discipline. And, like you said, I'm always very happy when I have the opportunity to, you know, assist and, you know, share what I've seen and learned, or, you know, other resources I can direct them to. And I try to, when I can, to even create the sense that I'm on the other side of the cubicle wall. You know, that kind of relationship where they can just, I've gotten text messages at breakfast where somebody's like, okay, I'm doing this and I'm stuck with that. And, you know, just that kind of, because everybody needs that, right? Everybody wants a team around them. So, and it doesn't have to be a consultant, right? That's why we do things like the Mastermind group and other groups, find organizations where you can have very personal connections with people, and they're there on call and you're there for them. Yeah. And kind of create that environment that we don't usually have like other teams do. This big mechanical engineering team, big software team, but it's good.
Yeah, I think we had a great conversation earlier today on the Mastermind group that we're both part of. So, I would recommend that as well.
Yeah, if people are interested in Mastermind, feel free to reach out to me or to Fred or Celine Geiger. We've been keeping that going. So, if people are interested in that, just reach out and you can get involved in Mastermind. And that's really its motivation, is to connect reliability engineers so that they can be there as a reference for each other, resource for each other. Great. Well, thank you, Chris. It was a really good conversation, and I think a lot of people will be able to relate to it. And I think reliability is fun, one of those funny disciplines where reliability engineers don't often come out of, you know, education programs. They're kind of made in the workplace. I think a lot of us have a story like that. So it was good to hear more about yours.
Yeah, glad to share. Thanks for having me on the program, Adam.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. And we'd love to see your comments or feedback on this episode and look forward to talking with you again. Take care. Bye.
Hi, it's Fred here. Just a quick note on improving your reliability engineering professional development. Join Ascendo Reliability and opt in to the weekly update email list. You'll receive a weekly rundown of all the new content added to the Ascendo Reliability site. Click through the items of interest, including articles, podcasts, webinars, and more. Quick, easy, smart. Join Ascendo Reliability at ascendoreliability.com/go/membership.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.